Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 420 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing good, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Let's dive straight into the review part of the show. Let's waste no time. We're going to start here last Friday, October 27th at the Carib Royale Orlando in Florida, USA over here. It was live on DAZN. Just one fight to mention, the main event for the IBF, IBO, WBA and WBO female featherweight world titles. Amanda Serrano defending those 45-2 with a draw, now 46-2 with a draw. She was able to beat unanimously over 12 3-minute rounds Danila Ramos, who's now 12-3. I don't suppose you saw this fight, Eddie, but Amanda Serrano completely dominated Danila Ramos. As we said on last week's show, it was a groundbreaking, history-making fight, seeing two women get it on for 12 3-minute rounds for the first time in boxing history. And a lot of people felt that the extra 16 minutes of fighting will definitely secure Amanda Serrano for the KO. But no, Danila Ramos had never been stopped in her two losses before, and she lost absolutely every round on all three judges' scorecards. She was extremely tough, but extremely game, and was able to see out the 12th and final round. So, yeah, unanimous decision for Amanda Serrano, wide in the end. Moving on. Sorry, go on.
I just wanted to ask how they... You basically answered it. I just wanted to ask how they looked in the latter rounds, like in the championship rounds in the 10th, 11th, and 12th. I wanted to... Because I didn't get a chance to see it. I wanted to kind of get an idea of how they looked, you know, like did they look the worst for wear, or did they still seem like they had stuff in the tank left, even though obviously she must have been taking some kind of a beating, or at least coming in second place, which in any case would mean, you know, she might be struggling. But if the conditioning looked good and they were able to do it, I'm just pleased to see that they're able to actually, you know, go to full 12.
Awesome. Yeah, to be honest, the conditioning was very good. Amanda Serrano, after the fight, said she would have loved to have done 15, and she looked pretty fresh in the 12th round. Ramos was quite fresh as well, quite a good mover, good feet, the rest of it, and, you know, didn't allow herself to kind of get stuck in a corner and just, you know, shipping punches. So, yeah, it was what it was. I would have liked to have seen a stoppage, to be honest with you, but, yeah, Serrano didn't deliver in that part of it, but listen, hats off to her. Moving now though to the Poliforum Benito Juarez in Cancun, Mexico. This one was also on DAZN. It was on Saturday night, this one. On the undercard, Justice Hooney with a win. He's now 8-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Andrew Tabiti, who's now 20-2. Tabiti, I think, has only had two fights at heavyweight. He was in here against a big heavyweight. He's very tough, Tabiti, as we know. And yeah, I thought it was a lot closer than the scorecards had it. I think, I can't remember what the scorecards were, but they were really, really wide, if I'm not mistaken, to Justice Hooney. I just thought that it was a little bit more competitive than that. There was a lot of competitive rounds, but yeah, I don't think he seemed to get the credit for it, actually, Tabiti. Just seeing the scorecards now, 10-0, 8-2, and 8-2. So, yeah, I think that was a little bit wide. And the main event, Oshiki Foster, now 21-2. A TKO win for him in the 12th and final round in what was a successful defense of his WBC World Super Featherweight title against Eduardo Rocky Hernandez, who's now 34-2. What a fight this was, and particularly round 11 that will go down as one of the best rounds of the year. Eddie Hearn feels like it was the best round of boxing he's ever seen. I'd love for you to see the round, to be honest, Eddie. I do have a clip of it that I can send you at some point. But anyway, Oshaki Foster remains the champion. It was a fight where he needed the knockout, actually. They showed you the scorecards at the end of the fight. The scorecards were 106-103. What else did we have? I think that one was... Yeah, that one was to Oshaki Foster. But the other two cards, 107-102. So by 5 to Hernandez. And 110-99. So there were some crazy scores, but it looked like he was going to be on his way to a split decision win, Eduardo Hernandez. He would have become the new champion. He just needed to not get knocked out in that 12th round, but it was too big of an ask. Started the fight very aggressively, Hernandez, and Oshaki Foster was kind of moving a lot, you know, having his back to the ropes a lot, on the back foot, but countering well. And like I say, I think taking a lot of shots on the gloves, riding a lot of shots, you know, coming back with his own. But he was losing quite a few of the rounds. I didn't score it strictly, but I felt he was losing the fight. I don't think he was winning the fight. But like I say, I think a lot of the judges and the rest of it were kind of giving it to Eduardo Hernandez based off of his aggression, based off of the fact he was on the front foot the entire time. He hadn't been over, I think it was 5 rounds for like many years or something like that. And yeah, you could see that in the later rounds. He was kind of spent. Like I say, round 11 was mental. He was taking a real beating off of Foster. He looked like he was on the verge of being stopped. I think the referee could have actually stopped it, to be honest with you. He was all over the place. His legs had gone. The towel could have came in, but then all of a sudden he lands a big shot on Foster, and all of a sudden it gives him the energy to finish the round quite strongly. The pair were just, you know, standing and trading, and then obviously the bell went, and then in the 12th and final round, Hernandez had blown his load really in round 11, and Foster was able to get the KO. Unbelievable, dramatic finish to what was a really, really good fight, but I think Rocky Hernandez can come again, but what a win for Oshaki Foster. I think his stocks have gone up massively. He's answered that question, you know, the gut check question. And yeah, he can certainly take some punishment and come back. And yeah, can't question his gas tank. Smart stuff. Moving now to the Swamlam Night Bazaar in Bangkok, Thailand. Over here we saw Wisaksul Wangek, a.k.a. Suretsaket Sorungvisai, a.k.a. Eddie.
The rat eater.
The rat eater. But he's a happy rat eater this week. He's now 54-6 with a draw, a TKO in round 5 against Sukhprasad Pompitak, who's now 28-18. Didn't see the fight, but yeah, all the best there to Mr. Wangek. Moving now to the Boulevard Hall in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, US. Oh, I was going to say USA. What am I talking about? Whoa. Pause. It was live on ESPN Plus. It was live on BT. Whoa. Pause again. TNT Sport pay-per-view. Let's just talk straight away about the main event here, Eddie. I'm going to come to you. Tyson Fury now 34-0 with a draw. A split decision victory over 10 rounds. Fury down on the deck in round 3. Francis Ngannou, a debutant who is older than Fury by a couple of years and hadn't had an MMA fight, I think, for... I think it was like 2 years, something like that. I'm not an MMA fan to tell you the exact days and stuff, but yeah, still puzzled, still can't quite believe what I saw on Saturday night. But yeah, what did you make of it? Firstly,
to be quite honest, most people are gonna say, you know, Tyson should have been able to handle this guy in his sleep, and you know, it shouldn't have been, you know, any real contested type of situation. In my opinion, he shouldn't have fought an actual fight. I think it should have been an exhibition because, you know, what does it say that you get to go in against the, you know, top heavyweight in the sport? in your first fight. You know what I mean? A lot of other guys who were probably more deserving of an opportunity like that, regardless of whether the belts were on the line or not, there's a lot of other guys who would have been more deserving. But because of the fame and this whole YouTube situation and, you know, the MMA versus boxing comparison type shit, it creates this opportunity for this to happen. And Tyson, and I'm going to say it straight up, Tyson didn't really take this seriously. You could tell by his demeanor and the whole thing. I mean, he always is pretty lighthearted with things and joking and laughing and messing around. But you could see the way he was fighting. He just, he had no real, I'm not going to say he didn't have any answers. I mean, because there were parts of the fight that he started to, you know, take control. But it shouldn't have been anything where it was going back and forth like that. You understand what I'm saying? It should have been, he had control the entire time. And Tyson's my guy. I think he's, you know, the best heavyweight that's out there right now. And probably one of, you know, one of the better ones in history. But the reality of it is he did not look good out there the last time out. And, you know, we shouldn't even be having this conversation, to be honest, you know, with a guy like Francis Ngannou, regardless of, and I'm going to say this, he actually impressed me in some ways with his, you know, his understanding of like certain parts of range and certain shots. And even he tried to even, you know, he was even going southpaw and everything in there. But see, with him, there was no real pressure to be excellent. You know what I'm saying? He can get in there and, you know, he could have got knocked out in the first 10 seconds and it would have been like, oh, well, you know, he's not a boxer. You know what I mean? So there's really no pressure on him to really be excellent. So anything going, you know, going forward for him would be a bonus. Any positives, any kind of positives, even if he was to go to distance, let alone knock Tyson down. So what this does is now creates this tornado of misinformation about, you know, Tyson as a fighter or boxing versus MMA. And I don't want this to be the case. You know what I mean? Because most people are going to be mad. Oh, man, you know, MMA is better than boxing. You know, you're going to get some of the guys that, and all this bull crap that they're going to say, oh, yeah, MMA fighters come in boxing, they could do well. Look what happened with your guy, Tyson Fury. Listen, you could clearly see, in my opinion, that he wasn't prepared properly. And when I say in at 12 week camp, yeah, you can say that. I've seen Tyson after a 12 week camp, even when he was coming off of being 300 pounds, over 300 pounds. And I'm trying to tell you right there, that didn't look like him after a 12 week camp. Now, he might have been in camp for 12 weeks, but he wasn't in camp training properly for 12 weeks. And he wasn't focused. He was probably a lot more focused on him facing Usyk after the fight than facing this guy coming up. This was just like a mid camp kind of glorified sparring session for him, and that's the way he treated it. That's the way he looked like he just had a bad day in the gym. But now there's this whole bunch of cameras and a whole bunch of people watching, so now he has to save face. And you know, it's just give all credit to Francis Ngannou for actually getting in there and doing a good job with the version of Fury he had in front of him, because even Fury in this, you know, condition should have still been able to handle him no problem. But you know, he was awkward. There was a lot of things that he wouldn't have expected him to be able to do that he did, that is Ngannou. So, you know, you got to give credit there. But Tyson Fury with a serious focus and like a real dedicated camp to a guy in particular, to this particular guy, would have done way better than that. Even if he wasn't able to get him out of there, it would have definitely looked like he was worlds above him. That's just my opinion. It looks bad on Tyson, and you know, people are, like I said, people are going to try to make the comparison with boxing, but this is an isolated situation. Do not, and I repeat, do not, and I'm talking about these MMA fighters, try to get there and bring their guys into boxing and think they're going to have a whole lot of success fighting, especially in the lower weight classes, because it's a different world there. So, you know, it happened. Did I score it? No, I didn't really pay attention to it. And I didn't see it until after the third round anyway. I think if they were going to do anything, maybe give it a draw. I think I really don't think that should have been an actually recorded fight. I think it should have been an exhibition, but that's just me. Anyway, you know, that's my assessment of it. you know, Tyson, you know, I think, you know, and this is going to give people the ammo to say, oh, man, Usyk is going to kill him and all of that. And I'm sitting there and I'm going to tell you one thing. Do not believe the hype. Do not believe the hype. Now, I'm not saying that Usyk is not a formidable opponent and not capable of winning. What I am saying is don't look at that fight and make your assessment. That's not a quality way of doing it. You know, styles make fights, not situations. Not just a guy coming in and fighting a guy that he has no real understanding of. You know, because he didn't really have a style that Tyson was going to, you know, he didn't really have anything to look at to prepare for it. So that's another thing you got to think about as well. And, you know, like I said, you know, it is what it is. It happened. You know, all credit to Ngannou for doing what he did. His stock goes, you know, way high now, especially in boxing. So, yeah, we'll see what happens in the future. But don't believe too much. Don't take too much out of what you've seen, because that's not necessarily going to be what you're going to see when Tyson fights Usyk.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Eddie, with what you're saying there. You can't, you know, base his performance the other night, you know, against Ngannou. You can't base that on anything, really. It's nothing to do with Usyk. Usyk's a guy who he's going to be taking much more serious, and Usyk's a guy who's much smaller. You know, there's, you know, everything about the two men is completely different. Usyk's a master boxer, and Ngannou isn't. Usyk's a much smaller guy, and Ngannou's this big, powerful, strong man. You know, they're polar opposites, so you can't really read into much that happened the other night. I agree with that. I do see a hell of a lot of people now saying that Usyk's going to probably knock him out, probably beat him, all the rest of it. You know, we've spoke so many times on Usyk, you know, the fact that he's gone the longest time in the top 100 heavyweights in the world of getting a knockout in the first six rounds. I don't think he's going to get it against Tyson Fury. You know, it's not going to be in his best interest to, you know, to even be putting powerful shots together against Fury. He needs to be mobile himself. It's going to be a totally different fight. I agree with you. As for the actual fight itself the other night, it was very embarrassing for boxing. I was of the opinion that Fury was probably going to just... I didn't think he was going to go in there and smash him in like two rounds like some idiots... Well, say idiots. Some people were thinking. And I can understand why. You know, this is an MMA fighter coming to fight the best heavyweight on the planet. I didn't think he was going to take him out in a couple of rounds. I always thought that he would go in there, have a little look at him for a few rounds, and then try to take him out down the stretch a little bit, or maybe just completely stay away from that powerful big right hand and beat him on points, wide on points. So that was what I thought would happen. But I did not expect to see him down in the third round. And you could see, I think Fury was quite surprised, even as early as the first round, how relaxed Ngannou was in a boxing ring. It was crazy. It was like this guy, you know, had loads and loads of boxing matches, you know, that no one knew about behind closed doors somewhere, and it was a big, well-kept secret. But yeah, I mean, like I say, I didn't score it, to be honest with you, but I think all the big moments were for Ngannou. I think Fury won a lot of rounds off of the jab. People tend to forget things like that because it wasn't a big right hand that landed, and sometimes, I mean, I looked at the punch stats as well. Tyson Fury obviously outlanded Francis Ngannou overall, and Francis Ngannou only actually landed more punches than Tyson Fury in three of the 10 rounds, and one of those rounds was the knockdown round, of course. So, you know, if you gave him those three rounds, one of them's a 10-8 obviously, and Fury wins the rest of them, then obviously he wins the fight. I do just want to touch on the scorecards as well. Obviously it was a close fight, and the scorecards were 95-94 for Fury, 95-94 for Ngannou, and 96-93 for Fury. I do just want to point out that the judge that gave it to Ngannou by a round is actually the judge of the three judges with the least experience. He's a guy that started judging in 2009 for a couple of years. Then he took a mysterious almost 4-year break out of the sport, and he's come back now. He's from Canada. He's come back now, and he's, you know, been judging a little bit more, but he hasn't judged anywhere near this kind of level at all. So I don't know if that played a factor in there. I don't know. You know, like I say, a lot of people at home had it for Ngannou. Maybe that judge was more correct and accurate than the other two. But I'm just saying, I just want to point out there's a little bit of a difference in terms of experience and the level that you've judged at. You know, I don't know if that means you can be more easily influenced by the crowd or not. I don't know. Yeah, not a good look for Tyson Fury all in all. Like I say, I want to kind of wrap the Tyson Fury talk up at the moment. But yeah, not a good look. Very embarrassing. Don't want to see any more of these types of fights. I just think it's a waste of time. Eddie Hearn's come out now. He's so confident, saying that Joshua would smash him to bits every single day of the week. It kind of gets under my skin that Eddie Hearn's jumping on Tyson Fury while he's down, so to speak. Like I say, I don't think what we saw the other night can come into any other fights. They're saying that Joshua would smash Ngannou to pieces if they fought. I think there's a chance he could. Styles make fights. Sorry, Eddie, go on.
No, I agree with you 100%. I'm listening to what you're saying. Eddie Hearn, he's just being a promoter, to be honest. I mean, he's been around boxing too long to make a really stupid assessment like that off of one fight. Boxing, and rightfully so, in most cases, is a what have you done for me lately sport. You know what I mean? You can look great one night and look completely terrible the next. I mean, if he wants to say he'll smash him to pieces and all this and all that, look at Anthony Joshua's performances. He's been one of the most inconsistent heavyweight champions that we've ever seen. So it's like, if you want to really jump on that bandwagon of, oh, he was just, you know, he's terrible and this guy and this one did it. I think he's just being a promoter. He's just trying to get, you know, gain some credibility toward his man so he can make an interesting fight. But please don't get it twisted. And this is the same thing, and this goes for anyone making these crazy assessments just off of one performance. You couldn't be in any more dangerous territory making these kind of judgments. And the same thing with, and I'm saying it to Eddie Hearn, it's just not a good thing to do. And like I said, he shouldn't be saying that anyway, once you're looking at how his guys performed not too long ago. So I just wanted to say that, but I agree with you 100%, Joe.
Yeah, and speaking of Eddie Hearn's comments, it was just last week that he came out, before the fight, and he said he was pushed for a prediction on Fury Usyk, and he actually said he expects Fury to beat Usyk, who we know beat Joshua twice. Those fights weren't even close. So I'm not sure. Like Eddie Hearn, obviously, I bet he wishes he could go back in time and take back that comment, because he admitted that Fury, he feels, will beat the guy that beat his guy. Now he's saying off of that performance that actually Joshua would knock Fury out. But yeah, it is what it is. Moving on. So disappointed for Tyson Fury though, man. But anyway, moving on. On the undercard, I don't know if you saw any of it, Eddie. If you did, then interrupt me. But yeah, Moses Itama with another good win, a TKO in the first round against Isvan Bernaf, who's now 10-2. Itama, spiteful as he always is, looked really good. I expected an early finish for him, and that was what happened. Arslanbek Makhmudov as well, now 18-0. I expected an early finish for him. A first round TKO against junior Anthony Wright, now 20-5 with a draw. That one was for the NABF and the WBA Intercontinental Heavyweight titles. He's a terrifying fighter, Makhmudov, man, I swear. Like I said, he's very explosive, big guy, really strong, super-duper scary. And yeah, I think he's going to be a fun heavyweight going forward. I don't know where the ceiling is. I think he's quite limited. But boy, oh boy, can he bang. And Jesus, man. Imagine, they'd never make the fight because it would be too dangerous. But him against like a Daniel Dubois, that would be bombs away. Also on the card, Carlos Takam lost. He's now 40-8 with a draw. He was TKO'd in round 4 by Martin Bacoli, who's now 20-1. Like I say, a fourth round TKO. Bacoli came in at £299, which was shocking. Apparently he was nursing an injury through camp. He wasn't able to kind of, you know, work out to his best ability. Got in there, absolutely massive. Didn't do much moving, just kind of stood in the middle of the ring, and Takam was using up a lot of energy on the ropes, moving around. Takam had his moments, but I expected better, really, for Takam. I thought that, you know, I think I even said on last week's show, this fight's probably going to go late. I thought we might see it go the distance. I put a small little bet on Bacoli to win on points. And I didn't expect him to take Takam out this early. Takam seemed to be having a little bit of an Indian summer in his career. He put in some good performances. Even through losses, he looked quite good. Even though he's 40 whatever years of age. So yeah, I was quite disappointed with him, actually. But yeah, he took some big shots off of Martin Bacoli, who, by the way, has come out and said that during his fight, with Takam here, he actually swallowed a wasp, and the wasp got in his mouth and stung his mouth and all the rest of it. So that's a bit of a weird one. But yeah, good win for Bacoli. I think he was very fortunate to get Takam out when he did, because I don't think Bacoli would have been able to actually stay in there for 10 rounds in the condition he was in. So I think in a way he rolled the dice and it worked out for him. But I think that, yeah, if he was unable to get Takam out in that round, I think he'd have been absolutely blowing for the rest of the fight. So yeah, I don't know. That's what I thought. But yeah, good win for Bacoli, not taking nothing away from him. Also on the card as well, former WBO heavyweight world champion, friend of the show, Joseph Parker, now 33-3. A KO in round 3 against Simon Keane of Canada, who's now 23-2. It was for the vacant IBF Intercontinental and vacant WBO Intercontinental titles. Really happy for Joseph Parker. I think it's probably one of the best performances of his career, certainly in recent times. But I really heavily criticised him when he got in there with Jack Massey. He looked absolutely dreadful. But then, like I say, he went back to Australia, boxed Fega Opelu, took him out in a round, but he's not a great fighter, let's be honest. And here he got in with Simon Keane, and if he would have lost this fight, he'd have been in a lot of trouble, to be honest with you, Parker, who I'm not entirely sure is promoted by anyone big at the moment. I'm not sure if he's still with Boxer or not. I don't think he is for some reason, but anyway, he was out there on the undercard, probably because he's Tyson Fury's friend, and he looked really, really good. Put his shots together really nice, really, really clever stuff, and yeah, he looked fantastic. I was really, really, really happy with his performance. So yeah, got this KO in round 3, brutal performance, and yeah, really happy for Joseph Parker. And also on the card as well, Fabio Wardley, now 17-0. A TKO for him in round 7 against David Adelaide, who's now 12-1. It was for the WBO European, the British and the Commonwealth heavyweight titles. Like I say, Fabio Wardley with the win. Very, very exciting contest. Obviously, we knew about the bad blood outside the ring. Fabio Wardley, I expected to rack up some of the early rounds, but I thought through the mid part of the fight and onwards, we might see David Adelaide have a few moments. And I think David Adelaide would have been able to soak up some of the big shots early and come on late. That's how I kind of saw it. But to be totally honest with you, I was very, very impressed with Fabio Wardley. He started the fight brightly, picked his shots well, the better of the work. And I ended up giving him every single round till the knockout. And yeah, I was really impressed with Fabio Wardley. I thought that at times they were talking to each other, but Wardley was keeping his head, wasn't getting drawn into Adelaide's games. And yeah, Fabio Wardley pretty much dominated Adelaide every round. I was really, really underimpressed with Adelaide. I just felt he couldn't really do anything. He looked slow. He looked sluggish. Wasn't putting his shots together well. At times, he would kind of just throw like a mad hook that would just whistle by the chin of Wardley, and you thought, what if? But other than that, Wardley was just too clever for him. You know, I liked his movement, his head movement and the rest of it. And yeah, he just simply put his shots together better and pretty much showed the world there that these two guys were so closely matched. It was supposed to be a 50-50, but yet when they actually got in there, Woodley looked so good. He completely bettered David Adelaide. Tough times for Adelaide. Good stoppage from the referee. Steve Bunt said afterwards as well, he said to Adelaide, "I've known you a long time, but the referee got it right." Respect to Bunce for saying that. Adelaide was fuming. I thought Bunce was saying something could have been a bit antagonising, but no. Credit to Bunce for saying his honest thoughts. And yeah, Adelaide took it quite well. But yeah, Woodley, the much, much better man there. And then moving to the final card of the review part of the show, we saw TJ Doheny go out to Japan once again, back in Tokyo, back in the Kurokian Hall. I think he was a 5-1 underdog. He's now 25-4 because he was able to spring an upset again. A TKO in the very first round against a previously undefeated Jaffeli Lamido, who was 11-0. He's now 11-1. It was for the WBO Asia Pacific Super Bantamweight title. So yeah, TJ Doheny upsetting the odds once again. That's two times in a row he's gone out there to the Kurokian Hall in Tokyo, Japan, and sprung upsets as a big underdog. I was wanting to put a little bit of change on him. In the end, I didn't do it. Now I wish I did. But what a performance from TJ Doheny. I swear to God, he looked like he was finished at one point in his career a few years ago. Having the fight with Iron Up Baluta and the rest of it. But he seems to have just, turned it round. I'm not sure how old he is. I know he's up there in age. And he has just turned his career into like a second, like a part two of his career. He's 36 years of age now, but still going very strong there at Super Bantam. All the best to him. Hats off to him, honestly. He won the week. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the reigning and undefeated British and European super bantamweight champion. It is, of course, Mr. Liam Davies. Liam, welcome back on the show, my man.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure, just like the last time. So, Liam, we last spoke back in June, not too long ago. At that time, you were getting ready to fight Jason Cunningham. Some people were expecting a tough fight. However, you recorded your first round KO of your career. What a statement. Talk me through the short fight while it lasted.
Yeah, it went well. Obviously, it went to plan. I backed everything off that I said I'd do. I generally believed it, wasn't just talk, and I think I've shown that on the night. It was good, but on to the next one. Like you said, people was thinking it was going to be my hardest fight, and I proved people wrong. So that's what I'm looking to do, and keep improving and showing that it wasn't just an off night. But a lot of people can make excuses after you win, and that seems to be the thing. Every time I fight, someone's made excuse. So, yeah, I don't take too much from it. Roll on to the next one and keep chasing that world title.
Yeah, like I say, it was a real statement. On paper, it looked like it was going to be your hardest fight. But yeah, you caught him with a shot and didn't let him off the hook. It was a brilliant win. Before that Cunningham fight, obviously you were heavily linked with a Dennis McCann fight, but you both had your own business to take care of. You dealt with Cunningham in one round. McCann had to get past the man you'd previously beaten, Mr. Iron Up Baluta. McCann looked good early in that fight, but as the fight wore on, Baluta came back into it and was seemingly all over McCann. The fight, as we know, ended up being a technical draw after 9 rounds. What did you make of that?
On the night, I thought a draw was fair. I didn't, obviously I'm a fighter, not a judge. I didn't know he counted round 9. But if I counted 9, I'd say you had to give it Baluta for sure. So, yeah, like I say, I got nothing. I don't want to knock anyone. He's a good fight to watch. Great fight to watch, in fact. And I was rooting for McCann, so we had this fight ourselves. But yeah, I'm sure it will happen down the road. I think he's got to do the Baluta fight again. I think he can win the fight, and advise him to watch my fight against him.
I was going to say, that was going to be my next question. I was going to say, because I always thought that the McCann-Baluta fight would be a really hard fight for McCann, and it played out that way. Obviously, he's going to have to rematch Baluta now. And I was going to say, do you think, obviously, yourself against McCann is dead in the water now, but maybe not. Maybe for now it is, but maybe, hopefully, we see it in the future. Yeah, let's talk about your next fight, Liam. You'll be making a defence of your European title on the 18th of this month in Manchester against an undefeated fighter, the undefeated Italian, Vincenzo La Femina. What do we know about this Italian, Liam?
He's got two arms, two legs and one head for me to punch. That's it.
Don't hit him in the leg.
Nah, yeah, he's got two legs to stand on, two arms to try and punch me and one head for me to punch, so... It's good. I'm glad I'm fighting someone undefeated. This is his big opportunity. But I see myself coming through. I've been in the gym, like sparring and stuff. Everyone says this, that, and the other. And I just feel like I've improved so much. And it was good last time. It was a shame because I didn't get to show how much I improved. And this one, hopefully he can go a few more rounds, but I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't last long. I don't even know much about the guy, but I hope he's got a big heart and a big set of cojones, because on the 18th he's going to need them.
Yeah, I agree. And I was going to ask you this as well. Obviously, you know, there's grudge matches that have been on the table for you, like McCann, like Andrew Kane. There's been domestic fights like Jason Cunningham and Mark Leach. How difficult, or maybe not difficult, is it for you to get up for a fight like this against a guy that boxing fans aren't too familiar with? Is it any more difficult?
Oh, nah, not for me. I don't understand that. But to me, there's an end goal, isn't there? I want to be world champion in. After this one, I'm hoping I'm closer to getting that, because I feel like I've dusted up the British and European level. I've beat the best in Britain, beat the best in Europe. And that's what I'm looking for now. I'm looking forward, and like I say, I hope them guys come up, because when I'm world champion, I happily defend against them.
And it's been a real pleasure to watch your career, because I feel like the last few fights, you've literally got better and better and better and better every single time we've seen you fight. And I just don't know where it ends. That, you know, it's looking amazing. The train's going at 100 mile an hour. I know you'll be preparing for a hard fight come the 18th, but are you expecting a hard fight, Liam?
I'm hoping. I hope, because I still believe that I've got plenty more to show. And yeah, one fight, but still don't think I've been 100% brilliant yet, and that's what motivates me to show. And yeah, there's been plenty of great super bantamweights from Britain, like Carl Frampton, Scott Quigg, like they've gone down in history. And I'm looking to mark Liam Davis's name on the next one, and the next up and coming great.
And I know that it wouldn't be the smartest thing to do to look too far ahead, but do you have any kind of idea about a plan for 2024, maybe the early part of 2024 at all, Liam?
Nah, I don't really plan, because it's out of my hands, to be honest. I see it as there's not much of my control, but I just want to keep fighting. I'd like 3 fights next year, and this 2-fight malarkey is not enough for me. I'm 27, I just want to fight. And it's weird, isn't it? Like, my manager tells me when you're 12 round fighting, you can't do as many, but I just love training. I love being in the gym and I love fighting. So hopefully next year I get my world title shot, if it'll come or not. It's just about keep winning and keep improving. And that's what I'm hungry to do and motivates me in the gym. I feel like this one, I've had 2 back-to-back camps, and if there's a time to perform your best, it's going to be on this one in a few weeks' time.
Well, there we go. A few weeks' time. The whole card, by the way, at the Manchester Arena is a really good card from top to bottom. Which other fight on the card are you most looking forward to, if you have one, Liam?
Oh, good question. I think the Nick Ball one be an interesting fight with Isaac, the Isaac guy who's been a world champion. Looking forward to Heaney and Bentley. There's a few good fights, and yeah, there's some great fighters on, Nathaniel Collins as well. So my aim is, I'm looking at it like there's 7 great fights on, big fights, and I'm coming to have the best performance. That's my plan.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, obviously Kakachi against Garner as well, another good fight on that card. We had Isaac Dogbe on 2 weeks ago. He seems bang up for the Nick Ball fight, which has made me even more excited. Yeah, so it's a fantastic card. I wanted to get your reaction as well. I have to ask you this from the weekend. Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou, Liam. I'm sure you were like the majority of us before, never gave Ngannou a chance. But what did you make of it? It was puzzling.
Oh, it's crazy. Still mad now. I think, yeah, I was probably baffled. But look, I think the guy's very strong, but I just didn't expect it. And obviously Tyson needed to win for boxing. And the way I say it, I can't knock anyone. They earned a truckload of cash and fair play to them. But yeah, it's definitely not something I expected. How it went down is something I'd have put my house on that happening. But yeah, it's boxing's a weird old sport. It's always a two-horse race, isn't it? And funny things can happen.
Always.
So fair play to Ngannou. Come from nothing. Like, I see pictures of him living in like a hut with his mother. So yeah, fair play to him. And shocked the world, didn't he? He might not have won, but he shocked the world. And yeah, more praise to him than Fury. I'm not sure what went on with Fury, if he didn't train hard or his voice, but I do think it was the power. The man's very strong and he set himself up for a great career in boxing, I think.
Did you score the fight? Like, do you feel like you felt one guy won or not, or did you not really score it?
I did. I'm not the best scorer, to be fair. So I wouldn't take, not that anyone cares what I think, but I had it 5-5, but with the knockdown, 6-5 in it. But yeah, I ain't the best judge anyway. But I was just shocked how comfortable Ngannou looked.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. It was really shocking. I still can't quite believe it. I'm still pinching myself. Just before we let you go, Liam, if you've got any closing words just to the listeners, if you just want to sign out before we let you go with any message, say whatever you like, my man.
Yeah, just thanks for having me to yourself and everyone that's listening, or make sure you tune in on the 18th of November, TNT Sport. Liam Davis going to finish the year with a bang. Big up my Telford people who are travelling down to come watch me. Nice change. Super excited for it. And of course, my sponsors who back me. Teamwork makes the dream work. Bars.
There we go. There we go. Finished it with a boss. Love it. Listen, Liam, it's always my pleasure speaking with you. Believe me, it's great to have you back on. Cannot wait for the fight on the 18th and the entire card. Thanks for your time. Best of luck, and we'll speak sometime after
top
the fight.
Top man, thank you very much.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. One fight to mention over here goes down on December the 9th. We're going to see Rabisi Ramirez step in the ring with Rafael Espinoza. That one is, yeah, for Ramirez's WBO featherweight world title. Also on that card, we're going to see in the co-main, Xander Zayas get in there with Jorge Fortea. And I think there's a few other fights on the undercard as well. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Bruce Carrington gets in there with Jason Sanchez. We're going to see Jahi Tucker get in there with Francisco Daniel Veron. We're going to see Rohan Polanco get in there with Keith Hunter, friend of the show, and a few other guys as well. That's it for that one there. This one goes down as well on November the 25th as part of the Benavidez-Demetrius Andrade undercard. We're going to see WBC middleweight world champion Jamal Charlo return to the ring. He gets in there with Jose Benavidez Jr., so both the Benavidez brothers in action. It's going to be a tough ask, that, for Jose Benavidez Jr., who, well, I didn't think he was a middleweight. I don't know what weight he's been boxing at recently. I remember him being a welterweight, you know, boxing Terence Crawford and the rest of it. I don't know if he's moved up since then. Just having a little look here. His last fight was just under middleweight, got in there with a journeyman. His last meaningful fight was last year against Danny Garcia at 154. So, yeah, I don't give him much of a chance against Jamal Charlo. But having said that, Jamal has been out for a long, long time. Yeah, so another exciting, intriguing contest, I guess. on that card. And yeah, January the 13th on the Baturbiev-Callum Smith undercard, we're going to see Jason Maloney defend his WBO bantamweight world title against Saul Sanchez. Again, the date for that, January 13th in Quebec City. That's it for the news. Moving on to the preview part now. We're going to start here at the Polideportivo de Cartago in Costa Rica. Over here, one fight to mention. We're going to see Yocasta Val, 29-2, defender, WBO and IBF world minimum weight female world titles. Over 10 2-minute rounds against Anabel Ortiz, who's 33-5. I'm expecting Yocasta Val to win that one, probably on points. Moving now to this one, it goes down at the Casino de Monte Carlo, São Medicine in Monte Carlo, Monaco. It's going to be live on DAZN, Matchroom Boxing, Eddie Hearn. Over here, a couple fights to mention that are a bit weird, and they're always a little bit weird in Monte Carlo for whatever reason, but yeah, I think there's only four fights on the entire card. That's how it's listed. But we're going to see the rematch between Jalissa Guzman, 13-3-2, and Ramla Ali, 8-1. It's an immediate rematch. Obviously, the last time we saw these two girls get it on, Guzman was able to spring a monumental upset by stopping Ramla Ali. She had Ramla down in round 5 and round 8, got the stoppage. And yeah, like I say, they're having an immediate rematch. How many months has it been? 5 months. It's a tough one, really, because this can... It's a gamble when you have an immediate rematch. I mean, if Ramla Ali comes and wins this fight, then all of a sudden it's a master move. But if she loses again, it's going to be, you know, too soon. She should have had a couple of confidence-building fights and then come back for the rematch. It's risky. It's high-risk kind of stuff here. But yeah, in this fight here, I think they're making Guzman the favourite, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, interesting stuff. But Ramla Ali to win on points, I think, is still worth a punt. I think she's obviously, well, I say obviously, the better boxer. Maybe it's not too obvious based off that last fight. But yeah, should be a good one, though. I think a lot of people are going to be tuning into that undercard fight there. Also on the card, we're going to see Solomon Sissoko, 16-0, defending his WBC silver welterweight title against Isaias Lucero of Mexico. He is 16-1. He lost his last fight by split decision. So what to read into that. But yeah, the guy was 9-3. Hadn't heard of the guy, but he does have a couple of names on his record. Christian Gomez, Rodolfo Orozco. Guys that I do recognise, but I'd still have to favour Sissoko quite highly. Probably on points. We're also going to see on the card Sivanathi Nonshinga, 12-0 with 9 KOs. He gets in there with Adrian Curiel, who's 23-4 with a draw. Again, I'd expect this fight to probably go the distance. I would expect Nonshinga to win. It's for the IBF flyweight, light flyweight world title. So a defense there for Nonshinga. And the main event, Joe Caldina, 16-0. He gets in there with Edward Vasquez, who's 15-1. It's for Caldina's IBF world super featherweight title. Edward Vasquez, you know, decent fighter, but I don't think he's going to be on the level of Caldina. His one loss came to Raymond Ford back in February of last year. And to be honest with you, he won a bunch of rounds. He managed to get a split decision loss, so one judge gave it to him. But that was the odd card, 96-94 to Vasquez. The other two judges, 98-92, 97-93 for Raymond Ford. What else did we have? Yeah, that's it there for Monte Carlo. Moving now to the Casino Miami JLI in Florida. This one is Don King Productions, and he's back again. Couple decent fights, to be totally honest with you. I don't know if you want to give an opinion on them. Let me just bring it up once again. Right, so here we go. So there's three fights on this card that I'm going to mention here. We're going to see Jonathan Guidry, 19-1 with two draws. He gets in with Jesus Escalera, who's 19-0 with 19 KOs, by the way. It's for the WBA Gold World Heavyweight title and the WBC Fekabox Heavyweight title. Jonathan Guidry, you know, he's been with Don King for a while. He got the shot against Trevor Bryan back in January of last year and lost a split decision for the world heavyweight title. That was when Trevor Bryan obviously, you know, I think moved from, what was it like? I think it was, I thought it was a regular title. Yeah, I think it was a regular title, whatever. He beat Stiverm for it by, you know, stopped Stiverm, got in with Guidry, and he won the fight by a split decision before getting absolutely iced by Daniel Dubois. But anyway, Guidry's not a bad fighter. Gets in with this guy, Jesus Escalera. Never heard of him. Southpaw, 43 years of age, from Puerto Rico. When he's not boxing as a pro, he does a bit of matchmaking. And when he's not matchmaking, he does a bit of promoting. So he's got his hands in a few different pies, but he's only 5'11". So... This will be fun while it lasts. And what else do we have? I'm going to save the best till last here. So, yeah, the next one is for the vacant WBC Cruiserweight World title. Wow. Yeah, we're going to see Noel Gevor, who's 26-2. His two losses came on points to Christoph Vladarczyk and Maris Bradis. Vladarczyk in 2017, Maris Bradis in 2018. Vladarczyk was a split decision loss there. Bradis, unanimous decision loss. Since the Bradis fight, he's only had three fights. One in 2019, one in 2020, and then one in 2022. And he hasn't boxed since February of 2022. So he's coming off a year and 9 months layoff here. And he gets in with Ilunga Makabu, who is 29-3. Obviously, Makabu looked horrendous last time out. He also hasn't boxed for the same amount of time. He boxed Badu Jack when he lost his Cruiserweight World title to Badu Jack in Saudi Arabia. And Makabu was down in round 4, he was down in round 11, he was TKO'd in round 12. And he looked like, you know, he got old overnight. He looked absolutely terrible against Badu Jack. I was so disappointed in him. I thought he would knock Badu Jack out, but he was terrible. But he gets in with Noel Gevor. Could be quite interesting, to be honest. That's my kind of weird fight. But I've saved the best till last. And basically, we're going to see Trevor Bryan, 22-1. We mentioned him a few moments ago, former WBA heavyweight world champion. He gets in with Cassius Chaney, who also has an identical record, 22-1. Cassius Chaney, two fights ago, lost his O to the undefeated George Arias on a split decision over 10 rounds. But here, gets in with Trevor Bryan. And I've actually seen the odds. And Cassius Chaney is the slight favourite, which I find quite interesting. I don't know where they've, you know, decided that from. But all the best to Cassius Chaney. I'd love to see him do it. He's a friend of the show. He's a nice guy. And, it's a chance for him here to be a former heavyweight world champion, whether you like it or not. But what a mad card. And there we go. Don King still promoting WBC world title fights in 2023. Who could have seen that? Moving now to the Tahoe Blue Event Center in Lake Tahoe in Nevada, USA. Over here, I'm guessing it's going to be on ESPN. It's a top-ranked show. Three fights to mention. Two really interesting ones against, you know, undefeated fighter against undefeated fighter. Somebody's own must go. Raymond Muratala, 18-0, gets in with Diego Torres Nunes, who also is 18-0. That is over 10 rounds there. Muratala's impressed me, you know, quite a lot in recent times, particularly last time out when he was able to blow away Jeremiah Nakafila in just 2 rounds. As for Diego Torres Nunes, 17 knockouts from his 18 wins. So, yeah, you know, you'd expect this fight to not go the full 10, but he hasn't really boxed at this kind of level, to be honest with you. Should be a good one, though. And on the undercard as well, another two undefeated guys, Henry Lebron, 18-0, a 10-rounder here against William Foster III, who's 16-0. This one, I think, is very, very close. I'm a little bit kind of on the fence. Henry Lebron's good. Obviously, got a good win a couple fights ago to Andy Vences. I like that win. But William Foster, good win a couple fights ago to Avery Sparrow. So they're the two kind of standout wins, I think, on both guys' records in terms of guys that I recognize and respect. But yeah, could be an interesting one there. Hard to pick a winner. And also on the card, Efia Jagba, a fighter that, Eddie, you're not too high on, but I'm actually a fan of him. 18-1, it's a 10-rounder. He gets in with Joseph Goodall, who's 10-1 with a draw, 9 KOs. The interesting thing is that in his last fight, he got in with Stefan Shaw and knocked Stefan Shaw out in 6 rounds, whereas the very fight before that, Stefan Shaw went the distance against Effie Ajagba, and Effie Ajagba won the fight 96-94 across all 3. So I thought, okay, Stefan Shaw's a pretty good fighter. He lost very narrowly to Ajagba. But when he got in with Joseph Goodall, he got surprisingly knocked out, and he was the big, big favourite there, Stefan Shaw. I know that triangle theories don't matter much in boxing, and we spent a lot of part one talking about that. But, yeah. If you wanted to say anything, Eddie, then say something.
Just real quick, I just wanted to say, you know, it's not that I don't like Efe Ajagba, but I just think he's really, really basic. That doesn't mean he's not a good fighter. That just means he's not a difficult fighter to figure out. And in world boxing at the highest level, if you don't have some kind of a deep game or some kind of trick or some real serious awkwardness, like kind of like Deontay Wilder, then even if you're a puncher, sometimes you might not be a difficult situation. You might not be a difficult fighter to figure out. So what I think he's going to end up having is issues as he gets to the highest level, because he's not really that difficult a fighter to figure out. He has to develop a different little beat, like a rhythm, a certain kind of, you know, offbeat thing to create a little bit of confusion with the other fighters, because if not, then he's just going to be that basic guy that throws a nice 1-2 and maybe a nice hook every now and again. Big strong guy, but you know, just there's really nothing else to go with it. Now you could beat a couple of guys like that, but you're not going to be able to go to the top and be in really elite company, because you're going to struggle with guys like Tyson Fury or even Anthony Joshua or Usyk, because they all have a little extra, and especially Wilder. So you know what I mean. It's going to be difficult. I don't want to say that I don't like him, because I don't think his skills are bad. I just think he's extremely basic. That's all.
Well, there we go. Still should be a good one. And the final 2 cards to mention, I'm going to run through these real quick. This one goes down on Sunday in Sochi, Russia. Over here, we're going to see Radzab Butaev, who's 14-1 as a pro. We remember his amateur record was supposed to be 392 wins with just 8 losses, 164 knockouts. That's what they said his amateur record was, which is absolutely insane. He's 14-1 as a pro. His last fight, he lost a split decision to Imantis Stanionis for the welterweight WBA world title. That was back in April of last year. But here he gets in with Fazlidin Gabenazarov, who, of course, won a gold medal at the Olympics in 2016. It's a great fight that's going under the radar. Gabenazarov, 11-1 as a pro. His one loss came to Michael Fox, friend of the show, who celebrated his birthday earlier this week. That one, like I say, goes down in Russia. And then the final fight to mention, it goes down next Tuesday, the 7th of November, at the Edison Ballroom in Manhattan, New York, USA. We're going to see return to the ring for former WBO super featherweight world champion and friend of the show, Jermell Herrin. 23-4, he's back in an 8-rounder against the undefeated 13-0 Nicholas Molina. All the best there to Jermell Herrin from myself and Eddie. But anyway, that brings part 2 to a close. In part 1, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the undefeated British and European super bantamweight champion, Mr. Liam Davies. In part 2, we brought you the news. We've just wrapped up the preview part of the show. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 420 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A massive shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated and reigning British and European super bantamweight champion, Mr. Liam Davies. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you same time next week.